This is Fresh Air. The 1978 movie American Hot Wax was based on the story of disc jockey Alan Freed and how he turned a whole generation onto rock and roll. Rock and roll historian Ed Ward says the film presented a cleaned-up version of Freed, but that shouldn't take away from his very real accomplishments.
It's March 31st, 1954, and it's late at night. Across America, a secret fraternity of teenagers lies awake, waiting. Their radios are tuned to a station that's not particularly nearby and that doesn't always come in. Still, it's worth a shot, because when they can hear it, it's like nothing else in the world. Suddenly, there it is, the slow drag blues tempo being pulled along by the saxophone.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Moondog Rock and Roll Party. Another big Tuesday night rock and roll get-together with all the gang in the Moondog Kingdom. And away we go with Gil Bernal, picking up that tenor horn to blow it strong, and the spark label and the whip! Hey!
That's the actual sound of Alan Freed's show of March 31st, 1954, captured on a tape he used to show prospective employers what he sounded like, a thing called an air check. Not that Freed needed an air check to get a job. By the time this recording was made, he was already one of the most famous, or should I say notorious, disc jockeys in America. It had all started less than 3 years earlier, in August 1951. Freed, who had already been booted out of Akron, Ohio, where his radio career had started, was on WJW in Cleveland, playing classical music in the early evening. This was appropriate, since he was a classically trained trombonist with a passion for Wagner, and who had named one of his daughters Sieglinde. But he'd been getting phone calls from a downtown retailer, Leo Mintz, who owned the Record Rendezvous. Mintz told Freed he was missing a big thing. White teenagers with plenty of money to spend were coming into the Rendezvous and buying down-and-dirty rhythm and blues records. Heaven knows where they'd heard them, but they were coming back for more. Mintz said, "The beat is so strong anybody can dance to it without a lesson." So Freed, as an experiment, debuted the Moondog Rock and Roll Party and found himself with a smash on his hands. The rock and roll bit was a good one. It told what the music he played was without calling it rhythm and blues, which would be as much as admitting that it was black music. To Freed, rock and roll was what white kids could call rhythm and blues and get away with it. He even tried to copyright the term a bit later, but he was turned down. His trademarks, beside good taste in records, were a breathy delivery in announcing them and a propensity for shouting over hot instrumental parts.
Pop a cap of that good air and brew, Moondoggers, and live it up. We're going to be saying hello to a lot of you. Our big rock and roll party, you know, goes until 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's only 11:25. So have a ball wherever you are. And now Roy Milton and Make Me Know It.
In fact, Freed shouted a lot, and the enthusiasm was catching. He got into concert promotion and discovered that he was drawing capacity crowds, racially mixed and peaceful. And thanks to the fact that WJW was powerful and operated on a clear channel, kids all over the Eastern Seaboard began to get the message. Shortly after the tape we've just heard was made, Freed moved to New York, to WINS, where he got an amazing $75,000 a year, and where he began the famous holiday stage shows at the Brooklyn Paramount Theater. They were never recorded, but they sounded a lot like this tape from his TV show.
Here is the vocal group that had the first number one rock and roll song in America. The Penguins sing Earth Angel.
From there, it was fame and fortune, and just a little bit of sleaze. After all, his name appeared on songwriting credits for both Chuck Berry's Maybelline and Sincerely by the Moonglows, two songs he almost certainly had no hand in writing. But this was business as usual in those days, and Freed's star continued to rise. Soon, he had his own TV show, on which this chilling bit of interview occurred with Buddy Holly.
You going on tour again?
And I think so, uh-huh.
Buddy, we had a lot of fun. We did a lot of flying.
Yeah, we sure did. You know, I was just in the town the other day in Cincinnati. You remember when we landed there and the helicopter had crashed that day that we got in there?
That's right.
And we took the ride in there from the airport. It reminded me of when we landed
We rode every kind of airplane there was imaginable.
We sure did.
Those DC-3s were really something.
Oh, boy.
Without the seatbelts, we'd have been right through the top, that's
sure
for
would.
Sure. Buddy, we had a lot of fun together.
But Freed, unlike the imitators he quickly spawned, was too real, too unyielding when it came to playing anything but the original black artists who made the hit records, and he identified too much with the teenagers who made up his audience. His television show was canceled when a black boy, it was Frankie Lyman, was shown dancing with a white girl. Then the Paola investigations, predicated on the assumption that nobody'd play this junk unless they were being bribed to do so, began, and Freed was targeted. In 1959, he refused to sign a document detailing his business interests and was fired from his job. Eventually, in 1962, he was convicted of commercial bribery while others, like Dick Clark, went free. He died in Florida, unemployed, in 1965 at the age of 43. Alan Freed might have been silenced, but it was much too late to stop rock and roll.
Ed Ward is co-author of Rock of Ages, The Rolling Stone History of Rock and Roll. By the way, Alan Freed made several movies in which he played himself, including Mr. Rock and Roll, Rock Around the Clock, and Don't Knock the Rock. This is Fresh Air.